Welcome back to Alphabet Scoop. This is episode 22, and it's been a whirlwind of a week this week.
And a month, really.
It's been a little bit of inside baseball, but this was a record month for 9to5 Google, so claps all around for that. And this week specifically, there were so many stories that we couldn't really we had a hard time putting together the show notes for this week because there's like an incredible amount of stuff. I guess the most obvious thing is that it's IFA week, which has been, you know, pretty important for us in the past, but we've kind of strayed a little bit from covering the wider Android space or the third party OEMs. But we did have our share of coverage. For one, there was tons of phones, the LG G71, the Sony Xperia XC3, the HTC U12 Life, the BlackBerry Key 2 LE, ZTE X9 Pro, and then a whole slew of Chromebooks. There was just a ton of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Titles from the phone names, except for Sony, these aren't flagships anymore. These are mid-range devices at best. So this is usually Samsung's show with the Note, but they did it much earlier this year, and all the announcements were contained at that Unpacked event earlier this month. So,
yeah, Samsung's shown off, you know, if not a phone, they've done, you know, watches and stuff in the past, and this year it was, you know, a non-show for them. But I guess we should probably jump into the meat of the episode, because this week was a really big week for Google as well. The Google Pixel 3, the smaller Google Pixel 3, probably the headline of the week yesterday, leaked out on Reddit. Some anonymous Reddit user just got on and published on Imgur some photos of the phone after months and months of absolutely nothing for the smaller Pixel 3. Everything leaked out, and we also, interestingly, screenshots of our own Dylan's app Inware, which is basically a hardware inspector type app, also leaked out, confirming and corroborating some specs that we already thought we knew. So that was cool to see as well.
Yeah, but the design, we finally got a solid look at the design that are not renders. And honestly, it's a small Pixel 2 XL. It's a shrunken down 2 XL with, according to the Inware app, a 5.5-inch display at 18:9 aspect ratio, I believe. And that's, and it looks great. Personally, that's my next phone. It's small. It's smaller than the 3 XL. But hopefully they maximize the screen with these minimized bezels.
Yeah, I agree. It's probably my next phone too. I've been an XL person for the last 2 years. And this one I think is big enough. I tend to hover toward bigger phones, but I also kind of like the kind of middle ground phones that have been coming out lately, which are, you know, like kind of smaller in body with a bigger screen. And this may not be the same, you know, not to the same extreme as like the iPhone X, where it's like, you know, relatively small body with like almost all screen, but it is bigger than the original Google or both the Google Pixel and the Pixel 2. This one has a 5.5-inch display. And so it's kind of getting into that territory where it's like, it might be big enough for some people that might have wanted the XL model, you know? Mm-hmm. So that, I mean, for me, that might be the phone that I go with for the next year. I'm not sure, but yeah, I mean, I guess the big differentiator, as we mentioned this week, so we published a full spec sheet for both phones based on just all the leaks so far and some of our own information, kind of trying to piece together exactly what we know about all the phones. And I guess the big differentiator with this one, the most obvious one, is the notch in the display. So for those that are just so hardline anti-notch, it's going to be the phone to go to. I'm really not in that camp, but, I think it's going to be pretty popular with the technophile crowd, especially, compared to the larger, which has not received the best praise. One interesting thing, I guess I'll throw this in here. So, obviously Google's larger Pixel, I mean, Mark Gurman, Bloomberg reported earlier this year that Google was going to take the same approach that Apple did and, you know, embrace the notch, so to speak, with software by default, with Android, you know, not hiding it with a black, you know, cover or whatever. And interestingly, we've now heard that from someone who's actually had their hands on a Pixel 3 XL, I should say, that internal builds of Android P actually do have an option to turn off the notch, so to speak. So put that, you know, black bar on top. And I think I saw someone do a mock-up. If you put that black bar up on the top on the ears, so to speak, it looks a lot like a Pixel 2 XL. I mean, it already does look like a 2XL, but
I think it'll be noticeable given how tall this notch that we're dealing with. If they try to hide it, I think it'll be more noticeable than just, maybe it's an option again, but if the default is just embracing it, I think they're going to embrace it from all these weeks that we've already seen.
But yeah, I think it's clear. I think it's clear that it's embraced by default. But what's interesting is that I guess all these Russian reviewers who have their hands on the phone with an early release build or early software, they haven't mentioned anything about an option to turn it off. So that kind of contradicts what I've heard, which is that there is a build somewhere internally where it does let you turn the notch off. I guess turn the notch off and turn the black hiding thing. I guess that the same thing, but yeah. So I'm not sure if it's going to happen. I mean, Google has, I think in recent years, kind of strayed from giving users as many options, and they've kind of tried to make some more of their own, you know, stances and their own decisions on things. Yeah. Exactly. In the software design department. So I don't know if this was something that's maybe exclusive to this engineer's phone or,
Maybe just it literally just came up in response to all these leaks.
Oh yeah, I mean that's also a possibility. It could have been a recent addition where, you know, Google's seeing the anger about it. But then, I mean, I'm pretty sick and tired of talking about the notch, and I really do think that on a practical day to day level, most people, even those that say they don't like it, I mean, it really doesn't affect how you use the phone much. I mean, I guess you could argue turning it landscape to watch video is one of those cases where it's like that can be kind of practically annoying, but I don't know. I think that it's, the whole conversation is overblown, so I'm kind of ready to stop talking about it. go ahead.
Yeah, at the end of the day, these phones always look nicer in person. So,
oh yeah, that's definitely true. The last couple of years of leaks have made them look horrid. Honestly, I don't feel like they look as bad in the leaks as the last two did. And by bad, I think the last two, they looked, and they still do, honestly, they look like a year or two behind the curve in terms of, you know, physical design. I mean, look at the, shout out to 9to5 Mac and their leak of the iPhone XS this week. The XS in that render, which it is a render, but it's not a third party. It's the official Apple render. It obviously looks, you know, way ahead in the design department compared to the Pixel, and it you know, it's debatable whether or not that's true. But it'll be interesting to see how Google advertises the Pixel 3 XL in their marketing images. It's funny to kind of see actually how Apple has kind of turned around on this whole embrace the notch thing. All of their marketing images last year had, you know, a brighter background or a display that made the notch very apparent. If you go on the Apple website right now and look at the iPhone X, it's like there's nothing that hides. There's no screenshots that are like hiding the notch. It's like apparent. But then with this XS, whatever you want to call it, that 9to5 Mac leaked, it's very much hidden with this planet. I think it's Jupiter background. So So yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see if Google hides the notch in their marketing material. If we use what they did with the Pixel 2 XL and the fact that they hid the Pixel 2's existence as any...
It would be funny if we were getting a reverse situation this year.
That would be hilarious if all of the marketing images are of the smaller Pixel 3 and then the larger one is kind of in the background. But yeah, so we'll see how that goes. I would, if I were a betting man, I would say, I kind of am, but if I were, I would say that that they're going to do the same kind of thing where they're going to have some kind of background that's bright in some places and more dark toward the top so that the notch isn't accentuated, especially with how big that thing is. And then another post that I did this week was just about the Pixel 3 and Pixel 3 XL and the things we still don't know. So to round up this little section, we still don't know the prices for either of them. All we have is that Russian blog that mentioned the $649, $749 price points, which they have absolutely no reason to know. So we don't take that with a bucket of salt. We don't know anything about the color variants. I think I mentioned last week, I'll reiterate it again, that I've heard there's a red Pixel 3 XL, which... or coral, whatever you want to call it. I don't know if that's going to happen, but I've heard it's in development, or it's happening, or it's in the works. So that would be really cool to see. So far, we've obviously only seen black and white, clearly white and just black, or whatever you want to call it.
Have a name for black.
That'll be interesting to see if they stick with the same names to the Pixel 2 XL for
that
the Pixel
3.
Or if they come up with new creative names for the same colors. I would guess that they're probably going to just say the same.
Yeah, I think
just black last year, just black. I don't know. We'll see.
They always do something different.
The face-based security. I don't think we've learned anything new on that front this week, except for on the camera front. On the front of the Pixel 3, based on what we saw on Inwear, you had a different interpretation of this, I think. But based on what we saw on Inwear, it looks like there's variable aperture on one of the two front facing cameras on the smaller Pixel 3.
Which I do not get. If there are two cameras, why? If there are two, so I need to pull up the screenshot, but in Android 9, in Android Pi, the system has a different way of recognizing dual camera systems. And as we saw in the Inwear screenshot, both the first and second camera show up, and both of them have their own specs, and the app is able to pick up how there are two apertures for at least one of the cameras, which is presumably the primary camera. And I'm trying to figure out why there would be two distinct apertures when you could... on one camera, which is obviously more expensive, versus just sticking in two cameras, each with their own aperture.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. It's confusing at this point, because we also know that one of them, or even told, we're the only source that I've heard say this so far. So, I mean, we haven't heard any corroboration on this besides the three people that told me this. But that one of the two lenses is wide angle. So there's a lot to learn, a lot of little specs to nail down still. But yesterday's leak of the smaller Pixel 3 and getting those spec sheets did confirm other little details, like the battery capacity, which is almost 3,000 milliamp hours for the smaller Pixel 3, which I saw a lot of praise for.
Yeah, step up from 27.
Yeah.
On my Pixel 2, I've never really come across it being so small. So, but the increase is always, can't go wrong with that.
Yeah, it probably goes hand in hand with the phone increasing in size just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess the last thing we still don't know is the quality of the vibration motor. So that's a silly thing. And I talk about that a lot, but I would really like to know if they've improved over the two.
Yeah, I have a confession. I disable vibration all the time.
Oh, why? That's horrible. I guess I don't blame you if you're using a phone that has a terrible vibration motor, which is all of them except the iPhone.
No, I always disable. I don't like vibration, so I've never picked up on this obsession of yours, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, confession. I also think that the LG V30, which has one of the better vibration motors on the Android side, is still terrible. It's just, I mean, it feels like all the iPhone vibration motors, I'm pretty sure Apple made like literally twice the amount of space on the inside for the Taptic Engine than other Android OEMs have made.
Okay.
Because it's like it feels like very tactile, and none of the other Android phones like are even anywhere close. I'm not saying they're bad, so to speak. I guess they're fine in their own ways if you don't care, but if there's anything that I'm thinking, like, you know, this is a justification for Apple removing the headphone jack to make more space, I'm on the side of like, I'm totally fine with them making more space to have a bigger Taptic Engine so that the vibration motor can be better. So yeah, I know that's a super unpopular opinion. You can send me hate mail if you like. So yeah, that pretty much rounds out what's new in Pixel 3 for the week. I think that might be our last week ever covering Pixel 3 on this show, because we pretty much, there's nothing left.
What
there's
else?
Really nothing left. There's the price. That's really one of the only bigger things.
And I doubt we'll find that out until
official Google renders. That's yet to happen. Last year that happened because of some ads that accidentally went up like a week or two before the event. Droid Life posted those. I don't know how they spotted them. I forgot the whole story with that, but that's yet to come. And then beyond Pixel 3, we still don't know a lot of things about the hardware that Google's going to announce. If I were, I couldn't even write, you know, if I wanted to write a post called like what to expect at the October, 9th?
We got that date this week, actually.
Yeah. So
reported that it's an October 9th event in New York versus the past two October 4th events in San Francisco. So East Coast, that's going to be interesting. If it happens.
Yeah, if it happens, I'm going to push to fly you across the whole country to go to that. So
I wonder
if you're down.
Oh, I'm totally down. Big Apple. But yeah, it's just the weird inside the baseball thing, I think. Why are they deciding to switch it up? Because the obvious benefits of hosting things in San Francisco are you're close to your engineers. That's the same with dev conferences, that's the same with events. So a bit curious here what's happening.
Yeah, there's a bulk of engineers in New York, though. So
that's true.
But yeah, we'll see. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it's a venue thing. Maybe they
need a bigger venue.
It could be a logistical thing. It could be like moving up to a bigger venue, and it could be purely logistics. I don't know.
Always that we always need bigger venues. Last year there was this SF Jazz Center. They did this this two-story event. It was kind of cool. Nobody touched the Daydream stuff upstairs, but whatever.
Yeah, that place was kind of weird. You couldn't even. I mean, I didn't even know that they had a Google Home. What was it? Forgot.
A Home Max.
The Home Max. They were showing it off, and I didn't even realize until after we left that.
Yeah, in the corner behind the back.
It was like in the far back corner of the venue. So yeah, hopefully we don't have that issue this time. Although I guess I have no excuse for not, you know, checking that out.
That was your scoop.
That was my big scoop for last year's event, and that was the one thing that I completely, like, I was like, oh, I guess they just don't have them. but they did. Oh, speaking of Google Home Max, I guess we can go a little bit off track. The Google Home Max launched in a bunch of non-United States countries this week.
Out of North America. So it arrived in the UK, France, and Germany. And this is a good segue into what Google itself announced at IFA 2018. So I'll focus on the assistant, as we mentioned with the Google Home's, the Home Max smart speaker. So that was the one hardware bit. But with assistant, they announced that it's now bilingual, multilingual. So basically, you can set two default languages. And you can speak to assistant on smart speakers and phones in whatever, in either of those two languages, and assistant will reply in the appropriate one. And according to Google, multilingual support, bilingual support is a really big factor for many households, given that they're increasingly not monolingual. And they were in the blog post, they talked about the AI advancements that they had to develop to get to this standpoint. And it's a real differentiator for Google compared to Alexa and Siri, I believe. So that's another place where AI is in action. This is more of a Google Home Chromecast thing, but Chromecast can now display more visual assistant responses. And it's really neat because over the past few months, you could already ask what's the weather, and you would see a nice small forecast on screen. Now Google is expanding it to stuff like sports scores and I think calendar events and whatnot. So it's good integration, and it shows how if you buy into the ecosystem, things work out better for you. And lastly, for our international audiences, routines, both custom and ready-made ones, are finally rolling out globally. We've had these in the US since March, but now you can make your own custom macros. You can really get granular, and there are multiple countries around the world are starting to receive this feature.
Yeah, so again, I guess that was the theme this year, was that Google was announcing a lot of stuff that's already been out in the United States for a while for Europe.
Yep, basically fitting for IFA.
Absolutely. I guess some other IFA things that happened, there were those Sony headphones, which Gizmodo broke the embargo for a day early.
Everybody likes, apparently in love with these as a finally offer competition to Bose ones. Yeah. USB-C. Super nice.
Yeah, I'm not super audiophile, as you can tell with these AirPods.
but, I cannot wait for the Apple over-the-ear headphones. That's going to be sweet.
You mean Beats?
No, they're going to make Air.
I know.
Beats are bad. They're not bad. They're fine. They're basic, but fine.
They're fine, and they're priced like they are way more than fine. That's the problem.
They're colorful, and show me somebody else that makes colorful headphones. That's all I'm going to say. Everything's better in color.
The other thing was we had some smart oven stories this week.
Yes. Smart oven integration in Electrolux, I believe they're called. So
yeah. And GE did something too. I forgot. We didn't post about it, but
similar vein. But yeah.
Similar vein.
Google Assistant is in everything. Everybody's announcing these dual assistant Alexa devices. You don't see that coverage with HomeKit. So this is an assistant war to lose at this point. Because there was this other report from several weeks ago that Google has caught up to Amazon's Alexa, and the momentum is on Google's side. Which is actually quite fascinating, because if you just asked me earlier last year, I didn't know if Google could catch up to Amazon's dominance. But clearly at this point, they're doing it right.
Yeah, there was just so much stuff at IFA that I just couldn't keep up with it.
Yeah, I guess rounding out the IFA coverage, some nice Chromebooks. We're finally getting
the tagline this week was Pixelbook Killer.
Pixelbook Killer, yeah.
I think I saw that in like two or three companies' marketing, or not marketing material, but I saw that. That was the narrative headline. That people were...
Yeah,
the headline.
It is cheaper. It is, they're like $500, $600 premium materials, finally moving away from plastic. So I think that's something, that's a way to get at the pixel book, to make cheaper hardware.
Yeah, it's interesting to see the differing definition of premium. Like the Pixelbook starts at $1,000 basically, and well, I guess not, you know, on sale it's been like $750 or something, but you know, this week all these companies were like, "Yeah, we're making premium Pixelbook or premium Chromebooks," and all of them are like, I mean, the ones that they're calling premium, like Dell and Lenovo both had like $600 Chromebooks. So no one is really taking on, I mean, and except for, I guess if like higher spec'd models of these Chromebooks, none of them are really taking on that like 1000 plus, I guess, market. Is there any, I mean, there was one, I can't remember it right now, but there was one that was like $1,000 or something.
Mm.
But these are like, you know, I would say they're more like mid range. Like premium compared to what we've seen out of Chromebooks for the last like 5 years, mm-hmm. you know, because pretty much every Chromebook has been like $100, $200, kind of like going for that bottom of the barrel kind of, or building them with cheap enough materials that they could easily be also education Chromebooks.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting to me because it seems like the trend now is that Chromebooks kind of breaking out, you know, it's kind of breaking out of the, you know, the muck of $200, $300 Chromebooks that could also be education Chromebooks into like, now the Pixelbook has kind of popularized the idea of like, yeah, maybe it's an okay idea to spend more than $500 on a Pixelbook. And maybe it really is a good competitor to a Windows laptop or a MacBook. And so we're seeing, I think, a little bit more confidence from these manufacturers lately that they can pull off a $600 Chromebook.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's good for everyone, I think. When you are talking about what the definition of premium is, I think at this point these companies are just settling around it's made of metal and not plastic, which yeah. is a base low hurdle, but it's something, I guess.
Yeah, I guess rounding out IFA though is there were tons of Wear OS watches too. That was kind of the big
yeah. And there was a big revamp to Wear OS this week, which got yes. super buried, first by all the other news, and two by the Apple Watch, which we can talk about later. But so yeah, Wear OS got a big redesign, and I think this was a long time coming, given how we had these bits and pieces of what the next generation Wear OS would look like, from the chipsets, from Android P, but this time, with Android P being a more underlying update. So, but this week, Google announced that this redesign for Wear OS, that's quite expansive, really. So it's based on swiping. You can swipe left to access this assistant feed, which is basically the visual snapshot feature on phones, and it's just it shows you reminders, the weather, places nearby, things to do. And then there's these revamp notifications. They're still accessible by swiping up at the bottom of the screen, but this time around they're not individual cards, they're now compact, they're right next to each other in a list, and you can, when you tap on them, this inline prompt appears that lets users quickly reply, enter emoji, smart reply, that kind of stuff. So it's, everything is more focused, it's smaller, it shows you more density, which is honestly such a welcome thing. And the last little swipe is when you, to the right of the watch face now, is quick access to Google Fit and your rings and to start a workout. But basically, yeah, it's, you can swipe in any direction on the home screen and get to something. I pointed out that I think this is everything that consumers need, that users need at the end of the day, is light, is right there, is a swipe away, which is a good tagline for them to simplify Wear OS.
Yeah, I think that this is one example of a lot of companies kind of realizing what wearables are being used for, or studying their users and actually learning how people use these things. Because we're like 4-ish, you know, years into the wearable revolution, or whatever you want to call it, you know, ever since the days of Google Glass and, you know, earlier Android Wear days, we're a few years in now. And I think these companies are starting to, you know, really consider what really matters. I mean, Google noted in their blog post specifically that all of our people who use smartwatches, all of our interactions are all like a single digit number of seconds, or at least the average user has like a single digit number of second interactions, so like 4 seconds. And so their idea with this redesign was like the broader concept of like, let's take the few most important things and make them super easy to access. As you mentioned, there's basically 4 swipes, you know, it's like swipe down, swipe up, swipe left, swipe right. And those are the 4 things that people primarily want to use their watch for. I think the biggest one is, the redesigned Google Fit, which happened a couple weeks ago, and seeing mm-hmm. how that's now very forefront. Even doesn't matter which watch face you have, it's at the forefront now. It's a single swipe away to bring up the new Google Fit. That's a sign that Google realized, I think, how important the fitness aspect of these watches are. And, you know, that's something we've talked about on the show a lot, about how it seemed like that wasn't exactly one of the bigger focuses in Android Wear. It definitely wasn't from the beginning. If you remember the very first Android Wear promo video, it was definitely more about Google Now predicting all of your actions and getting you, like flight information and, you know, that kind of stuff. Which is cool, and I think it's on the horizon, and I think that's, you know, that's still a thing, and it's still important because they made the other swipe to access the assistant. So, you know, that's still important, but I think that they might have underestimated the wearable or the health aspect of it that the Apple Watch really, really embraced. Mm-hmm. And so now they're also embracing it. And I guess talking about a little bit about the Apple Watch, 9 to 5 Mac, as we mentioned, leaked the Apple Watch Series 4 this week. And it's interesting to me to see that Apple basically is doing the same thing, but to an even greater extreme. Google, you know, is making it so that there's, you know, you're a swipe away from 4 very key actions on your watch. Whereas Apple is like, nah, let's just put everything on the watch face and make everything that's a single tap away. Because if you think about it, I mean, Steph was tweeting about this. If you think about it, like, there's like, I think 9 or 10 complications on this one watch face on this leaked Series 4 watch. And I guess you could argue this is partially enabled, so to speak, by the fact that Apple managed to cram more screen on the Apple Watch. That's like the big physical redesign of the Series 4, is that it's, you know, more screen to body ratio. And so that's why, side note, I think that Apple's going to keep this super dense watch face exclusive to the Series 4 because in their mind, they're justifying, yeah, we were able to cram all this stuff in because we have more screen real estate to work with now.
Absolutely.
And not to mention the fact that it's a new feature and they can put it on all the marketing images and they can use it to sell more watches. That's the obvious thing. But I think that, you know, they took this idea of like, people don't, I mean, I tweeted this week that if you are swiping around on a tiny 1-inch screen, then you are already at the point where you probably should have taken out your phone and done whatever it was that you needed to do on your phone. Because I mean, that's really what you're doing, is you're trying to do things that are easier to do on your phone on a tiny screen. And so I think it's really interesting to see the general overall trend that's happening here with smartwatches is that, you know, both of these companies, they're both, you know, they have tons of designer minds thinking about this problem and thinking about how to make watches as compelling and useful as possible. And they've both basically reached the same conclusion, which is make a few very key things easily accessible within a single digit number of seconds. And I honestly think that with Wear OS, we're going to end up at the same extreme that Apple is doing with the Series 4, where I think we might end up with some super dense watch faces. If Google hasn't already designed them, I wouldn't be surprised if by the time that they launch their Pixel Watch, which that's a whole other conversation we can have considering some news that just broke like 30 minutes ago, or didn't break, we don't know. But considering, you know, Google's saying probably doing their own first party watch. It'll be interesting to see if they also have a super dense watch face. What are your thoughts?
So on on density mostly, yes, I definitely, personally speaking, I love as many complications. The more complications, the better. The more complications you can put onto a watch face, the less you have to interact with the entire watch. And honestly, it's a 1 point something inch screen. It's not, you don't want to swipe that much unless you have like a scrollable bezel or whatever. But what I'm really curious in what Apple does is that if that density becomes overwhelming, because at the end of the day, it's still like a 42 millimeter watch size screen body. And I could see this backfiring and that it becomes too complicated, because like I could see it backfiring and it being too complicated. But talking about Wear OS, I think that if Google cannot get that technologically, if they can't do pack big screens and small bodies or high pixel densities or whatever, I think they can always go back to that original vision of the Wear OS being an extension of Google Assistant, Google Now. It just serves you useful notification reminders when it suits you, when it helps you. Because I think that's the clear distinction that Google and Apple could set up. One being a complication heavy, you set what you want because Siri is not that good. And the other thing from Google is these very useful smart reminders that just come in when Google knows that it'll be useful for your life. So I think Google does have something to fall back on, but at the end of the day, I think there's still so many basic underlying technical challenges that needs to be solved, starting with the processor. Qualcomm teased an event next month, and I think we need to see what this new hardware brings in terms of performance first before Google can really start focusing on the actual operating system.
Yeah, I guess my defense of the super density, and I this is the way I think of it really, is I imagine interacting with a smartwatch as like things that are in front of or behind a very, very, very thick wall. And that thick wall is anything that you have to do to interact with the watch, such as open an app drawer and scroll through, or, open an app or go to in the Apple Watch's case, open up the app drawer. There's even an app drawer on the Apple Watch, which is multitasking screen. Mm-hmm. So the way I think of it is like, there's so much information in there that watch could potentially show you. But I guess most watch faces as of now, especially on the Wear OS side of things, give you like maybe two or three pieces of information. Mm-hmm. And, if you have to, some of that information might be valuable to, for instance, a lot of people have been arguing with me about, is any of the information that this Apple Watch is showing on the Series 4, is it really that useful? And for instance, you could use the UV index as an example. It's like, is knowing the UV index really, that useful for the end user? And I guess for most people, knowing the UV index is probably not, but is it much more likely to be useful if it's in front of that thick wall of having to dig into your watch than it would be if you had to open an app that is specifically for giving you the UV index on your phone or on your watch? Like, it's the difference between a 0 second interaction to learn a piece of information and a 5+ second interaction to find that information, maybe 3, 5, 10 seconds. Mm-hmm. And so my defense of the super dense watch face is if you can just put as much stuff on there that may or may not be useful to you at any given point in your day, it might be a lot easier to get in that habit of looking at your watch because there's so many different little tidbits of things that are in front of that barrier to entry, so to speak. Whereas if, like, in my opinion, any of those things that are behind that barrier to entry, it's like, you might as well have gotten your phone out because you're going to get more information, you're going to get better information, you're going to get, you're going to have more access to other information, you know, that that is deeper in your phone that, you know, you wouldn't ever be able to see on your watch. So I guess my, that's my thought on it is I'm super, super pro this dense watch face. And I hope we see it on the, on Wear OS too, or something like it. Because for me, I can see myself customizing these nine little complications and putting 9, 10 little bits of information that are useful to me on it.
They absolutely exist on Wear OS. I forgot what the watch face was called, but the problem is the complications suck. The third party developer sucks. Absolutely. The most of the good complications on Apple Watch are made by Apple. That's a thing.
Yeah, for sure.
There are dozens of apps which every single one of them having good complications that work and have been thoughtfully designed or whatever. But yeah, what do you think about people being overloaded? It's being overloaded by such density. I know it's user customizable, but as you and I know, people don't touch their home screens that much, really. It stays static. And the fear with something like a super dense watch face is that they end up interacting with another phone a miniature phone on their wrist.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of see it differently. I guess I see the super density as like you don't have to interact with it if it's just there. It's like a dashboard of information. And in the case of the Series 4, it looks like that they've done a pretty good job of making that dashboard useful, more so than any watch I've seen so far. So I don't really see it as, I guess you could. I mean, this is with the Series 4 leak, it's like 10 different tap targets to jump into something deeper. But in my case, I guess the argument I'm making is that nine out of 10 times, you might want that tiny bit of information, but you aren't interested in fiddling with your watch. And at least that's how I've felt wearing smartwatches for the last 2 or 3 years. I wore the G Watch R for a really long time. Super big fan of that one. I've worn the Apple Watch for a while. I obviously had a Moto 360 earlier on because it was super, super awesome. I guess all that time I've always felt like I want, you know, a lot of that information at a glance. I wanted as much of that at a glance information as I can get, but I really don't want to mess with my watch. If I'm going to do that, I might as well mess with my phone. To me, this is like, I don't know. I really hope to see something similar to it on Wear OS eventually, because I think Apple did a great job. And it's kind of sad though that we're able to talk about this 2 weeks before the event. So sorry, Apple.
Google's done this next month, I'm sure.
Yeah. So speaking of Pixel Watch, I guess we can move on a little bit. So the Pixel Watch, So we've heard that from several people. I guess we've heard that about, you know, internal workings on a Pixel Watch. We've also heard from, Evan Blass. Yes.
And sources like WindFuture Germany that fully detailed these three watches along with the chipsets and whatnot.
Yeah. So we have all of that information, the combination of those three sources would make it almost like a surefire thing that it's happening in my mind. Evan's track record is pretty solid. But Evan's track record plus, a couple of other sources is like, okay, it's probably happening. But today, Tom's Guide just reported a big exclusive that Google has confirmed to them that there's no Pixel Watch this year. Well, specifically, what they did is they quoted Google's director of engineering for Wear OS, and he said, to think of a one-size-fits-all watch, I don't think we're there yet. Our focus is on our partners for now. And initially, the article that they wrote didn't clarify this, but apparently, Google confirmed to Tom's Guide after the interview in a separate statement that it's not releasing a smartwatch this year. So that's literally that information is as of like 3 minutes ago. I'm not sure if, I don't know. There's potential here that maybe Google's they're misinterpreting something Google said, or someone for Google is speaking about things they shouldn't be speaking of. But now we have conflicting information because we've got 3-4 people saying there is one happening or there's likely one happening. And now we apparently have Google saying their article was updated just now. So at first I was kind of critical because it sounded like there was kind of like a boilerplate kind of statement of like Google doesn't want to, cannibalize their partners, which are all launching watches at IFA this week. But they just updated the article. It says Google confirmed after the interview that it will not release a smartwatch this year. So that's a weird thing for Google to confirm. Don't you think like, unless they're trying to like temper expectations, what do you think on this?
So I think, I'm sure it exists, but if from this comment, it looks like what's happened is that they canceled it. It's been canceled, it's been pushed, or whatever, however you want to phrase it. But I'm still processing this, but this is very surprising because, as you mentioned earlier, these so many sources can say that a Pixel Watch is coming. And beyond all that sourcing, it's the idea that Google will make its own hardware to push its platforms forward. It's been working so well for them. The Google Home, they're winning on that. The Pixels are universally praised. The phones are universally praised. But what we're seeing now is they're backing away from watches. And I think it's a bit of a bad choice. These partners, I think they can coexist with their partners if these smart speakers have proven anything. Especially with smart speakers, you don't hear about these other companies, but there are people who will buy expensive Harman Kardon made devices or Bose headphones. There is that the market can sustain multiple players with Android being the biggest evidence of that. And with watches, especially with watches, it's a style thing, it's a brand thing. People buy the brands they want. While the Pixel smartwatch is a brand for the more tech-focused, but there will be people who buy the Kate Spade watch, the Fossil watch, because of the brand loyalty. And what we're seeing with this is Google fearing, maybe, unless something went wrong with their plans and development, that they're cannibalizing.
I think anytime two unusual things happen within vicinity of each other, you should consider that maybe they might be correlated. And the two very odd things that happened this week were 9to5Mac leaked an image of Series 4 Apple Watch, which the whole internet is raving over. And some people are declaring the smartwatch war to be, quote, over, given this leak. And then another odd thing that seemingly happened, I'm not 100% sure that I believe it yet, but Google confirmed that a certain product is not happening. So like, that's very unusual for Google PR or Google in any way to confirm, yes, we are not doing this. We have no, usually it's, we don't comment on, rumors and speculation for future products or whatever. Like that's the typical response. And they could have easily given that response here, but it seems they've said, they've confirmed that it's not happening, which is unusual. And so putting those two unusual things, I'm not saying that there's a causation here, but to me, it seems like if they had a watch ready and they were considering launching it, or, to me, it seems the most likely scenario is that they may have decided that it's not representative or not good enough to be competitive. Because, we know that Google's hardware chops are still, they're still babies in this space. Like Apple is so far ahead in terms of...
But the alternative here is Google making it themselves. I don't think they can ramp this up in a year to make a competitive processor, competitive screen, battery powered.
Think they're scared of. They're scared of is doing another LG Watch style LG Watch Sport launch. Because they can only relaunch so many times before it gets tired and before, even if you consider upper management potentially saying like, yeah, we can't keep we can't keep throwing, you know, or throwing spitballs at the wall to see what sticks, you know? And so it seems to me that maybe what happened, I don't know, but maybe what happened is that they felt like what they have or what they could launch next month, maybe just wasn't competitive enough in terms of maybe physical style, maybe overall design. Maybe it's what they said in this art or in this interview with Tom's Guide was that they don't feel like they've nailed the intersection of fitness users and those who buy watches for style, which, I mean, that's pretty much the definition of the Apple Watch. The Apple Watches, they've designed one product that they're trying to appeal to two very different markets. And that's what Google said in this interview was, you know, we don't think we've nailed that. And maybe that's their goal. And if that's their goal, maybe they just felt like they weren't ready. I don't know.
The insinuation with we don't think we're ready is that they still have something and they're going to plan something for the future. But
yeah,
at this point, the way I would view it is either you just give up on this form of wearable of smartwatches and start doubling down on like augmented reality or whatever's next, because you've completely lost to the Apple Watch, or at least try doing something with good enough hardware. Because from all what these Google said that Google and Qualcomm said at I/O that a Reed smartwatch is coming, and if this what's being implied here by them not being ready is that the underlying hardware that's coming from Qualcomm isn't ready to take on the Apple Watch. There's so many insinuations here that they don't think we're ready.
I don't think they're ready, I don't think that necessarily means they're not ready from a spec or from a hardware ability, or, you know, that's not exactly what I mean. I mean, I think that the new Snapdragon processor or whatever Qualcomm announces will be great. And I'm sure it will power lots of, you know, whatever they're planning to announce, it'll power lots of great competitive watches. But I think that where Google might not be ready is, you know, from a product standpoint, you know, a product design standpoint. Like he specifically mentioned, like, well, I don't think we've nailed that intersection. And if you notice, none of the Wear OS partners are really going after that market of trying to make one product that appeals to both style buyers and sports buyers.
That's why the rumor was they are making 3 smartwatches, if that's to be believed.
Yeah. I guess you could argue that potentially. I mean, maybe that was Google. Maybe Google was considering launching, you know, 3 different watches for 3 different markets, and maybe now they've changed their heart on it and they want to launch one product that, you know, they can say is for everyone. I don't know. It's a tough one, and we'll have to think about it a little bit more this week and come back next week maybe and talk about it a little bit more. But yeah, I mean, I guess we're kind of running out of time. Is there anything else that happened this week? You did your review on the Titan security key, two little pieces of plastic.
Yes. This is mine. It's not a keychain yet, but, basically it's two factor authentication, which Google is making very public, very accessible by putting on the Google store for $50. I think that a more techie audience will definitely jump at this because it's backed by Google, so to speak. Well, it is Google Store. But it works. It's a utility. There's not much thought to it. I think the main conclusion of my review is that it's not for everyone, but anyone can use it at the end of the day if they so choose to.
Well, I should get one then. That's the takeaway.
Yes, security. We should all get one.
Yeah. How do you pronounce the name of that company, that the Chinese company that's making them?
Not trying. I'm not trying.
Not trying? Okay.
I'm not trying.
Well, apparently that company, we'll leave that name unsaid. CNBC confirmed that company is the company supplying the the hardware for these things.
Yeah.
And they kind of implied that the fact that they're a Chinese company makes it a security concern, which we both kind of found a little bit silly. Although I did have an article sent to me after I tweeted that they're apparently more buddy buddy with the Communist Party than most Chinese companies. So I don't know. Maybe there's something to the skepticism there. I'm not sure. Anything else that was notable this week? There was a bunch of Trump stuff. We won't get into that.
Yeah, that's another few hours.
The three EFA watches, by the way, going back to Wear OS, were the Skagen Falster 2, the Diesel Full Guard 2.5, which Gizmodo broke the embargo on and incorrectly said it had a 3-inch screen, basically 2.5-inch screen. And then the Casio Pro Track W, which is not small either. None of these are small, really.
Okay, I love small watches, but this Pro Track is like appealing to me. And like, I never like big, bulky G-Shocks, but this thing looks attractive in terms of what it can do. I'm never going to need dedicated built-in maps, built-in GPS maps, but because it's there, I kind of want it. That's a spec thing. But yeah. All running the 2100. That's the key takeaway of these. So if Google isn't doing it, hopefully somebody else is making a new smartwatch with a new chip by the end of the year, because that's the one anybody should buy at this point.
Yep. Let's see. There was Fingerprint UI in Chrome OS. On a bigger picture scale, Chrome OS is becoming a lot more like Android every day, which is interesting to watch. But that's been going on for years now. let's see. Yeah, I mean, I guess there was a bunch of little things. There was way too many stories this year or this week for us to really cover. So you're going to have to head over to 95google.com. You can check out the show notes for this show to check out a lot of the stuff we talked about. And we'll be back next week, probably going to talk a little bit about more of this stuff. And I'm sure we'll see more Google leaks in the next couple of weeks. We'll see. But until then, you can tune in to Alphabet Scoop here every week. We record this podcast every Friday and publish every Saturday morning. And you can find us on all your favorite podcasting platforms, such as iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, Google Play, and more. Thank you so much for tuning in. It's been a long one, but a fun one. And so we will see you next week. Thanks for joining me, Abner.
Bye.